Hello, my name's Claire Armistead and I'm the literary editor of The Guardian. One of the most pleasurable parts of my job is longlisting for the Guardian First Book Award, now in its 10th year. This year we had the biggest entry ever, 170 books ranging from fiction to poetry, history to travel and memoir. Six Waterstones reading groups across the country had the job of reducing that number to five. They came up with a short list of three novels and two works of non-fiction. Each week in the run-up to the prize on December the 3rd, I'll be interviewing a shortlisted author. And this week, it's Owen Matthews, whose book Stalin's Children is part memoir, part history of Russia, part doomed love story between two very different people. Owen, is that an accurate summary of it?
Yes, I think that's the best yet, actually, Claire. Well done. one of the tricky things about the book, I suppose one could say pretentiously that it defines genre, but I suppose it's rather difficult to categorise because it's sort of partly memoir, partly history. Ultimately, it's a family biography.
And the doomed love affair is not doomed in that it produced you, of course, but it's between your parents. Tell us.
Well, that's true. I'm not sure if either of them were in the room at the moment, I would actually want to call it a doomed love affair necessarily. But I suppose it's doomed in the sense that all love affairs are doomed. There's a great line from Vladimir Mayakovsky. Says the boat of love crashed on the shores of everyday life.
So tell us about your mother to start with, because in a way it's a sort of love letter to your mother. One could read it as
yes,
such.
Yes, I suppose that is true actually, because she is the thread that unites all the different historic periods that are described in the book. So really, it is more than anything a sort of a biography of my mother, going from her earliest childhood in Stalin's Russia and her life of great privilege as the daughter of a party apparatchik and a great Bolshevik enthusiast. And then she and her elder sister find themselves falling into a world of absolute confusion and horror when their father is arrested and taken away. And a few months later, their mother is arrested too, as an enemy of the people. The two girls are sent to firstly to children's prisons and then to orphanages. And when the war comes in 1941, when Hitler invades Russia, they get separated. And by a remarkable coincidence, which you would certainly not believe if it were in a work of fiction, they meet each other again. And that's basically the trajectory of her childhood. And then there's her Cold War love story with my father, whom she meets as when he's a young research student in Moscow and she's at a librarian. And they meet, they fall in love, and they have a great struggle to be united.
Describe your father a bit. He's from South Wales.
One of the things that I found most difficult to in the book is exactly that, describing my father, because a lot of things about his character and about his behaviour, I can't work out whether they are things to do with him personally or whether things to do with his generation. His parents were also not young when they had him, so he was born in 1932. So he was
in Swansea.
Mm. So he was brought up by sort of Edwardians in this sort of very unhappy family, sort of very much sort of clinging to respectability, with a very irresponsible and sort of rather philistinic father, and he was rather sort of bookish and unsporty and academic. He's all of his life been very distant, and that's, I suppose, what I'm trying to get at when I say that I'm not sure whether it's a generational thing or a personal thing, but he's always been an intensely private and extremely sort of withdrawn man.
He's quite bolshy. I mean, he's a man for whom that word could have been invented in a way, isn't he?
Yes, that's true. It's something that I came to admire in the course of the writing of the book, is exactly how stubborn he was.
What form did that take, that stubbornness?
He refused to do what he was told. When the KGB gave him an offer they thought he couldn't refuse, either you work for us or you don't marry your fiancé, he told them to get lost. And then he had the enormous courage, I suppose, or foolhardiness to imagine that he could take on this ideological divide that sort of split his world, and he would actually be able to score a victory over the Cold War.
He was an academic at Oxford all this time, and writing to the government to try and get his fiancée out.
Well, yes,
right?
But he didn't stay at Oxford very long because his bolshiness. One of his most bolshy moments was accosting a senior Foreign Office mandarin who had come to dinner at St. Anthony's, and at one point, I believe, over the port, called him a shit. That didn't go down too well in 1963.
But your mother, I mean, it worked, didn't it? Because your mother was then as part of a package.
Well, finally, yes. finally it did work, actually. But it took him 6 years to campaigning and keeping his story in the press and not giving up. And finally, indeed, amazingly, the British government were prevailed upon to throw in the request that three Soviet citizens that wanted to marry Britons were thrown into a spy swap that they arranged in 1969. So yes, he was ultimately successful. So the bullshit has paid off.
Now, there's a coda to this, which is that you're now based in, or you have been based in Russia as a foreign correspondent. And so Yes. You've come face to face with the new Russia, which is a very different Russia to the one that your parents experienced.
Not as different as I had once imagined, it turns out. Because, yes, I've been a correspondent for Newsweek from 1995 to 2001. I was there. And for the last 3 years, I've been back again for a sort of second helping. And I'm now Newsweek's correspondent in Moscow again. In the 90s, in the sort of wild and carefree 90s, I imagined that it could not be more different from the Russia that my parents had known, because that was extremely rigid and formal and extremely controlled in every aspect of society by the KGB, by a whole host of institutions, all of which collapsed with the fall of communism. And all that was left was sort of anarchy. And I found as an extraordinary sort of parade of phantasmagoria, in which I reveled for many years. And I loved it for all kinds of bad reasons.
Partying, I mean, really wild partying.
Yes, yeah, indeed. But now one sees how these old sort of instincts of authoritarianism and control are sort of resurging very powerfully in sort of Putin and post-Putin's Russia. It was an old communist era saying the Russian pig was lying on one side for 300 years. Now it turned over, it's now lying on the other side, but it's still the same pig.
And you're still in touch with members of your mother's family.
Lenina, my mother's eldest sister, passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. In
May, so just before. She'd had a fairly good innings. She was born in 25, so she was how old? She was 83.
She's a splendid character in the book.
Well,
isn't
right.
She?
So she did live long enough for me to extract her story from her in as much detail as I think is humanly possible. So I'm very grateful for that I had an opportunity to speak to her at such length, because my mother was an infant really when her parents were taken away, and she doesn't really remember. Her memory of that period is a blank. So in Lenina I had a very distinct living link to that world of the 30s.
And now you're married to a Russian as well.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
And is this? I get the impression that her family had a very different experience to your mother's experience.
Yes, it's funny, isn't it? My wife's family were artists, painters, in fact, for four generations. They never joined the party, but they're nonetheless sort of not opponents of the regime. They didn't suffer from the regime, and they managed through sort of good luck and good judgment just to preserve this sort of old world Russia and these old sort of rhythms and politesse and sort of the family traditions, which were completely destroyed on my mother's side. But on the other hand, one of the things that I find odd about, the most striking, and I found and I discovered this in the course of writing the book, is that though my mother was brought up as Stalin's child, as a child of the state, having had her and her father murdered by the state and her mother sent to the Gulag for 15 years, where she went mad, the child, my mother, Ludmila, was educated in the ways of the state. But nonetheless, she became a very passionate opponent of the Soviet system. That paradox is one of the striking things. I mean, and the contrast to the sort of other sort of sweet, diffident, sort of charming, cherry orchard-like family on my wife's family's side couldn't be stronger.
It is one of the great qualities of the book, that it has an ambivalence towards so many institutions that we have a rather sort of monolithic opinion of. Owen, thank you very much for coming in, and I look forward to seeing you on the 3rd.
Yes, well, thank you, likewise.